You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
All right, welcome to Word 3. This is rad, yo. If you haven't picked up, we're going with the 80s theme, and I grew up in the 80s, and if you don't like the 80s, I don't care. We're going to have some fun. The 80s were weird, by the way. I kind of didn't like a lot of things about the 80s. I mean, middle school, just even any decade, is like, okay. But we're having some fun, and we're kind of going with the 80s theme. But the reason we're calling it Word is because we are going to do an overview of, at least for this series, the Kings and the Prophets, which if you know anything about the Bible, or maybe you don't know much about the Bible, this is probably the one area you probably don't know much about. Maybe you know some people like King David and Solomon and stuff like that, but in general, we're going to take the next 4 weeks and try to go through 42 kings and 17 prophets and talk about all of them by name. And we're not even doing that till next week. We're going to do an overview, but this series is the third part of one that we've done a couple times before. We did the first one was called Word, and that is on our website. If you go to mc3church.org, click on Listen to the Point and look for Word. We don't have audio. Back then we weren't recording yet, but we do have what is called the whole enchilada handout, which honestly is right there worth the price that if you paid to get onto that website, which is zero. But it is a handout with all the blanks filled in. Speaking of that, you have a handout in front of you. You should. If you do not, can you put your hand up in the air like you just don't care? And David will get a handout to you so you can follow along at home. And also, if you need a pen, you might need a pen or a pencil. If you could bring your own, we don't have enough for all 6,000 of you. But if you have your own, if you need a pen or a pencil, raise your hand. We've got some extras in the back here. But if you could try to work on bringing that. So while you're getting those papers, those handouts, the Word series, the first one with the whole enchilada, we covered Genesis through Revelation and did an overview of how it fits together. We're not trying to cover everything. We're not going to deal with every little detail. We're going to show how it all fits together. And then the second time we did Word, the sequel, and there we kind of zoomed in a little bit to just the New Testament and gave you an overview a little bit more in depth of the entire New Testament. So this week, this series, we're going to zoom in a little bit to the Old Testament, which you'll see in a second where we're going specifically, and we're going to look at the kings and the prophets. So that's what we're going to be doing. Why don't we kick on the house lights here so you guys can see and follow along. We're going to try to keep it interactive. Today, honestly, is a little bit more boring than the rest of the series, I guess. I mean, Kara last week did the announcements and hyped this thing so much. I'm not going to live up to those expectations. I mean, Kara's hyping just by itself is just high expectations. But I appreciate the hype rather than, like, come next week, it's going to be dumb. This is what we're doing. And I want to do some things just to kind of get you in the flow of where we're going and what's happening here. So the first thing I want to look at is on your handout here, and I'm going to kind of, the screen has it. I'm going to write some things up here and just trust that you can follow along to fill in the blanks. Because of who I am, that's a nice way of saying that I'm a very particular person. Because of who I am and because I love those of you that need to fill in the blanks, every blank will be represented on the screen whether I say it or not. So just so you know, if you're one of those people, because like, you're weird. or you're just like me. Anyway, first of all, I need a volunteer that is under the age of 12. All right, all right. I'm going to need two eventually. So I'll just reserve you right now. Let me get you, Shelby. Both of you, just come on up here. Come on. You guys, put your hands up. Just come on. Yeah, I got you. Oh, hi, sir. I didn't see you back there. We'll get you again. All right. So why don't you just sit right there. Okay, good. Come on. Important, very important clarification there. So, all right. Why don't we start with you? Come on up here, Shelby. Okay? Shelby. See this board? It's the board. All right. And I want you to do something for me. We're going to talk about How many books are there in the Bible? You can have a seat just for a second, and we'll come to you in just a moment. All right, just don't knock the thing down because I've knocked it down like five times. So, here, let me pick a color that's not like that or that because those aren't hard, are easy to see.
Black.
Have all these colors. Look at all these colors. There's lots. Okay. Black. Like your dad's soul. Okay. Okay. All right. Why don't we go ahead? I would like you to write now. How many books are there in the Bible? This is going to be a quick little way to remember what it is. So, would you please write Old Testament? Can you write that? And if you can't, it's on the screen right there. So it'll come up on the screen, unless we froze as we often do at this point. So old. Yeah, that's good. Good, good, good. Keep going. Excellent. Okay. All right. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now you can just, actually you can go have a seat and you come up here. You can also count, right? I thought so. Okay. All right. All right. You probably can count to nine, can't you? It's kind of an important number. All right. So here we go. I'll let you pick another color. Which color would you like? Okay. All right. Great. All right. Now, so here's the word Old Testament, the two words, actually, Old Testament, O-L-D-T-S-T-M-N-T. So could you please do me this favor and count how many letters are in that word? Okay. Once you've figured out that number, would you please write that number right there? Excellent. All right. Now, would you please count how many letters are in that word, assuming we spelled it right? Yeah. Nine. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. You can go have a seat as well. All right, so here we've got Old Testament, O-L-D, T-E-S-T-E-M-T. Three letters in Old, nine letters in Testament. So ready? Because you all know how many books are in the Old Testament right off the top of your head. But just in case, if you do three and nine, a three and a nine equals 39. A three and a nine is 39. There are 39 books in the Old Testament. So if you're ever wondering how many books are in the Old Testament, hey, OLD, 3, TSTMG, 9, 3, 9, 39. Okay, excellent. You get it? I don't have an eraser. Oh, that's got slime on it. This one doesn't. Or so we think. My, that's cleaning better than normal. I wonder what causes that. All right, I need two more volunteers. All right, I said I'd get you Sarah, so Sarah, you can come on. Sit down, son. All right. Yeah, come on up. Okay, now, when you have a quick talk here. You get to pick any color, and you can just have a seat right there, Sarah. Pick any color. All right, you can go for it. If you can't read it, then you're going to ruin everything. Okay, now would you please write on here the words New Testament? All right, and if you need help, oh yeah, write it as big as possible. Thank you. No, that's good. I think that's really big. Oh, okay, there we're picking it up a little bit. Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. Now you can pick any color that you want. I'm going to die, but that's okay. Just pick a color. Take it. Grab it. All right. Now, would you please count? Does anyone have a magnifying glass, please? Count how many letters are in this word, and then write that number underneath it. All right. And now, would you please count how many letters are in this word, and write that number underneath it. Can use your finger. Nine. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. You may have a seat. So, three letters in the word new, nine letters in the word testament, and the answer to this, how many books are in the New Testament? It's pretty easy. It's 3 times 9 equals 27. There are 27 books in the New Testament. So if you're ever wondering, how do I know how many in the Old, how many in the New? OLDTESVMT, 3939, Old Testament books. New Testament, NEWTESVMT, 3 times 9 equals 27, and I can figure that math out. Booyah! So, but you just have to remember, the New Testament is times, the Old Testament is an. And so, that is how many books are in the Old Testament, how many books in the New Testament. Therefore, if you add those two numbers together, there are 66 books in the Bible. So there we go. We've just covered the entire Bible in just a few moments. And so there's 66 books in the Bible. Now, let's zoom in a little bit. Now, we're going to, at this point, the New Testament, we're leaving it behind. If you want to catch up on the New Testament, again, go to WordTheSequel at mc3church.org, and you can listen to that and go in. But we're going to zoom in on the Old Testament right now. That's the New Testament online. So the Old Testament, first of all, just some information. The Old Testament was written by 28 authors, give or take. 28, because there's some, like, did that person write that? Who is that? But 28 authors is a fairly good estimate of the number of people that wrote the Old Testament. And that span of time in the Old Testament, from Genesis through Malachi, covers an era of about 2,000 years. More than 2,000 years, give or take. Not counting Genesis 1:1, that says, in the beginning, God. Therefore, God existed before all time, so we can't count. I guess you can put an infinity in front of that if you want to be something like that, but stop it. Anyway, 2,000 years is how long the Old Testament was written. So the Old Testament is broken up into 3 major divisions. And again, this is all to kind of help you see how it fits together, because let me just pause for a second. I know you want to fill in that 3. But you can't read the Bible. Well, you can read the Bible. You can't read the Bible from Genesis through Malachi and have it make sense. And I don't mean that the Bible doesn't make sense. It doesn't mean you can't read the Bible. But it is not a chronological book from Genesis through Malachi. It is not a chronological book from Genesis through Revelation. There's different purposes and different parts and different pieces. And so some of them you do read in a chronological order, meaning in an order of time, meaning this happened and this happened and this happened. But you cannot do that with the Bible in general. And we'll explain why in just a moment. But understand that. So if you're sitting down there and you're reading, you know, you finish up Esther, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, and then you get into Job and you're like, what? And then you get into Psalms, huh? And then Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and then all of a sudden you break into these prophets, and like, what in the world is going on here? So I will explain. It's not a chronological book in terms of beginning to end, all 66. And if you were here for the crop series the last 2 months, you know, we looked at that, and we talked about how we need to read context and what's going on around the series, or around the passage that we're reading. So just understand that, because if you think, and this is, again, that's why we're doing this, if maybe you're like, oh, I never realized that. Well, good, now you know something that you can't read. So there's 3 major divisions. And by the way, this is the slow week. Next week, it's going to get really fast. So if I'm talking too fast for you, just keep following the screen, fill in the blanks. Follow the screen, fill in the blanks. Okay, so there's 3 major divisions. The first major division is what we call history. Now, these 17 books, Genesis through Esther, for the most part, can be read in chronological order. That is the history of Israel, the history of God working with Israel and people and calling Abraham, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But that is the history book. So that part, for the most part, as you'll see in a moment, it isn't all that way. But for the most part, that can be read chronological. That is the history. That is the story of what is going on. Then the second major division is what we call poetry, because these are poetic books. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs, depending on, we'll see that in a second. But these 5 books take place in the midst of some of the other things that are going on in the history books. You following that? So this is kind of like an appendix. This is happening here. It's sort of like a Rogue One going on in the middle of Episode 3 and Episode 4. You know, this is happening in here. Even though we watch the movie afterwards, it's happening back here. If you don't know what that means, shame on you. It's Star Wars, people. Okay, so history, poetry is the second thing. And the third major division is prophecy. And I will say this, and we're going to cover this later, but a prophet was a person that spoke on behalf of God. Prophet did not necessarily mean they were just telling the future. That wasn't what a prophet was or is. It wasn't just simply telling the future of what's going to happen next. So you've got prophecy, and prophecy is Isaiah through Malachi. Isaiah through Malachi. So the next 17 books of the Old Testament, and if you add that up, that equals 39. That is the last part. And the prophets also spoke and taught during the time of the history books. So Genesis through Esther is the history. All those other things kind of happen in pieces. And in a couple of weeks, that will totally fit together for you. But just understand that now. So, three major divisions. What are the three major divisions before they come up on the screen? The first major division is, I want you to talk to me because, dang, I'm talking a lot. You can help me out here. The first major division is, all right, thank you. The second major division is, and the third major division is, okay, good. History, poetry, prophecy. Now, within those divisions, there are four subdivisions, two for one and two for the other. So, there's four subdivisions that happen within those books. The first one is within the history books. So, in those 17 books of history, there's two subdivisions under history. The first is what we call the Pentateuch, which is a Latin word that means five books, essentially. Pentateuch, five teachings. Pentateuch, five books. And honestly, like, why do you use such a complicated word? Well, it's a word. It's used often to describe the first five books of the Bible. Also, the reason why these five books of the Bible are grouped together, they're often attributed to be written by Moses. He wrote those stories as God revealed it to him through his Spirit. But Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, those books are called the Pentateuch because they kind of contain some things that are happening there. And we don't have time to go into all that because we're not talking about that. We're talking about Kings and Prophets. So the second subdivision within history is what we just kind of call general history. History. So I know that, like, you have a major division and a subdivision. I know, just deal. But it kind of helps explain that there's the Pentateuch, which is the five books of the Bible. That is the law that is often referred to, and even today, Jewish people, the Pentateuch is the deal. That is the stuff, that is the McDLT of the Jewish law. Like, that is the thing that is so important to them, because that is the law where it's all contained on Mount Sinai by Moses, and I can't get into that, because we need to move on. So, within history, there's the Pentateuch, and then history, which is the last of those second 12 books. Then, moving on, leave poetry alone for a second. Then over within prophecy, there are two subdivisions there. So that's four total. Pentateuch, history. And then within prophecy, there's what we call the major prophets. And that is the first five prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel. Did I miss one? No, that's five. The reason we call them the major prophets is because the books are just big. There's nothing about them. They're not better. They're not cooler. They're not nicer. But they're just bigger than the second category, which we call the minor prophets. And those last 12, Hosea through Malachi. We did a whole series on Hosea called Hosea, It's Complicated. And as you were listening last month, God did not tell you to marry a prostitute, because the Bible shouldn't be cropped to apply to you. But God did tell Hosea to do that. And if you want to listen to this, it's like one giant commercial. I don't mean it for it to be that way. But it all fits together. There's a reason we teach the Bible here, people. Anyway, so Hosea was all about God and how God used Hosea to... But I can't talk about that right now. We'll talk about that in a couple weeks, actually. So, Hosea through Malachi. Please, no comments from the front row. Whether or not you might be married to me. So, those are the divisions. Now, let's look at it in a visual way, because some of you are visual learners. And so, first of all, you've got this group of the first 17 books of the Bible, Genesis through Esther. And these are called the what? 17 books. Come on, people, these are called the what? The first 17 books of the Bible are called... Very good. So, history. Boom. Okay, now, the first... five books, the subdivision within history is called the first five books within history is called Pentateuch. Yeah, and if you said it right, you should have spit on the person in front of you. Pentateuch. So, Pentateuch, and then the next 12 books are called the history. On the count of three, just to clarify a few things here, I want you to just say your name out loud so that verbally someone will hear the sound that is coming out of your mouth. Because I think you can do this. On the count of three, your name out loud. One, two, three. Okay, you can do this, people. All right, so the first major category of the first 17 books of the Bible is called... All right, and then the first subdivision is called... Pentateuch, and then the second subdivision is called All right, now the next five books of the Bible, which we've got on the screen here, Job through Psalm of Solomon, these are called
poetry.
Yes. Okay. And then we've got another group here that goes Isaiah through Malachi. And Isaiah through Malachi, now I'm going to let you think about it for a second, because I'm going to ask you what these 17 books are called. This major division, think about it. Okay, this major division is called
prophecy.
Very good. And then within the prophecy section, we have two subdivisions. The first five books are the major prophets. Come on. And the second five are, or second seven, 12, seven, five, seven, 12 are
minor
prophets. All right. So that is how the Old Testament looks. Just kind of a way to tie it together, because everything outside of history ties back in to what's happening. Now, for the next 4 weeks, we are going to cover these books of history. 1 Samuel through Esther. So in 4 weeks, we're going to cover 1, 2, 3, 4. How many is that? So 12 minus 3. I can figure that out. That is 9. So we're going to cover those 9 books of history. And we're going to cover all of the prophets. And just for fun, we're going to cover 4 of the books of poetry. So buckle up, be ready, because we're going to fly through this stuff. But the goal, of course, and you know, a lot of things we do talk about are like, and we will at the end of the morning talk about, you know, what is God doing in our hearts? But sometimes we teach things just to know. And the reason we're doing this series, and we've done this series, is so you can kind of get how all these other things fit. Because there's a reason that God created the Word of God the way it is. There's a reason that the story is what it is. And there's a reason that all these things, pieces fit together. And I want you to get that, because sometimes you're like, what in the world? How does that fit? Hopefully, by the end of this month, at least with the Kings and Prophets, at least with those books, you'll be able to understand how they fit together. So I'm not even following my notes here. What's next? Okay, let's talk about water. Okay. All right. We talked about water. Good. Moving on now. What I want to do is we're gonna do a map here, and I wanna talk about water. Now, just to clarify, let's bring that map up on the screen for me. If it's blue, it's water. Okay. I want to make sure that we're all on the same page. That if it's blue on the screen, it's water. It's representing water. So you've got a map on the very back, this exact map. Now, on your paper, there is no blue. It is like a dark, pale gray. So just to clarify. So, and if you're looking at it, it should look like this. So you can draw a little N if you want for north or something like that, just so you know which way is up. Because this, we're going to go over this now, and then we're going to kind of hold that and stick it in your back pocket. And in a couple more weeks, that's going to come into play in a big way, what we're going to be talking about here. So first of all, I want to talk about the bodies of water. There's some things to remember here. First of all, there are 4 seas. So say that. 1, 2, 3. There are 4 seas and then 4 rivers. Say that.
4 rivers.
All right, so there's 4 seas, 4 rivers, and a gulf. So if you're ever wondering what is going on in the Bible in terms of bodies of water, we're going to cover every one of them, the entire Bible, for the most part, right here on this map. So 4 seas, 4 rivers, and a gulf. So let's talk about the 4 seas. First of all, you've got the Med. The Med Sea there, which you can't read, sorry about the contrast. But that says Med, M-E-D, short for Mediterranean. And if you want to write Mediterranean, you can, good luck. But the Med Sea, that is the biggest body of water there. And, of course, we still have the Mediterranean. We still call it the Mediterranean Sea today. If you look at a map of, that would be Europe. And the top of that would be Southern Europe and Greece-ish. And then the north, the bottom of that Med Sea, or the south, I should say. Sorry, my geography teacher beating me right now. The southern part of the Mediterranean Sea is Africa. So you got the Med Sea. So say Med Sea. All right, then you've got the Dead Sea. No, sorry, psych! You've got the Red Sea. You got the Red Sea. So on three, say Red Sea. 1, 2, 3. So you got the Med Sea, the Red Sea. So there's an arrow kind of pointing down to that that body of water down the corner there. I hope you can kind of see that. There's kind of like little things coming up. That's the Red Sea. And if you're reading through the book of Exodus, you'll probably have heard about the fact that they crossed the Red Sea. So that entire body of water is the Red Sea. So they've got the Med Sea, the Red Sea. Then you've got the Dead Sea. Say Dead Sea. All right, the Dead Sea. That's at the bottom of that like little, like, I don't know what you want to call it, like a stick figure man with no arms and legs and a long neck. there's probably a better illustration than that, since that doesn't really apply at all. But that bigger body of water at the bottom is called the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is important because it's actually the lowest place on the planet, I believe. And the reason is the Dead Sea is because salt water collects there and nothing can live there. But I'm sure you're going to be like, oh, there's protozoans and amoeba that live there. Great. That's fine. Good for them. But for the most part, there is not living things there because it's so high of a salinity content. And actually, one of the things about the Dead Sea is that you can go there and float and you can't sink. Because the salt content is so great, there is a high buoyancy level. So you've got the Med Sea, the Red Sea, and the Dead Sea. And then you've got the, this one doesn't really rhyme cool, but then you've got the Sea of Galilee at the top. The Sea of Galilee is that little circle at the top. So you got the circle at the top and then the kind of the wider one. The Sea of Galilee, and of course, if you've read the New Testament, Jesus spends a lot of his time around the Sea of Galilee. Peter, he's a big fan of the Sea of Galilee. He walked on it. So the four seas, Med Sea, Red Sea, Dead Sea, Sea of Galilee. Got it? Say yes. Okay, now let's look at four rivers. The four rivers we've got, first of all, we've got the one on the top, and this is not correct geographically, but the one on the north. But to help you remember, the one on the top there, all the way over on the side, that comes all the way to the top-ish, that is the Tigris River. Over there, the Tigris River. See that? That is a river going down. It is above the other one. It's on top, so T, Tigris. Because the other river is the Euphrates River. The one just south of that is the Euphrates River. And if you did any kind of, you know, Middle Eastern history or anything like that, you probably had to learn about the Tigris and the Euphrates. That area in between the Tigris and the Euphrates is called the Fertile Crescent, a.k.a. Mesopotamia. So it is a well-known area because those two rivers provide a source of water for what is otherwise desert. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So the Tigris River is on the top. The Euphrates River is on the bottom. You with me? Okay. So moving on. Two more rivers. I'm not even sure which one's next, so hit me with it. All right, there. In between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea is the Jordan River. The Jordan River is a very, I don't want to say popular, that's not necessarily the word, but the Jordan River is very, it's often mentioned in the Bible. Joshua, when he crossed over into the land that God had promised the Israelites, they crossed the Jordan River. Jesus spent some time, he was baptized in the Jordan River. So the Jordan River is an important body of water. So Sea of Galilee is the top of it, Dead Sea is the bottom, the Jordan River connects the two of them. And then the fourth river we've got is the, all the way on the left to the bottom hand of the screen, or of your paper, is the Nile. The Nile River. And the Nile was turned to blood in the Old Testament. There are some issues with the Nile River that we, as we read through the Bible, some things happen there. So that's the Nile down there. So four seas, four rivers, and then a gulf. And that's the other corner of the map down there, and that is the Persian Gulf, which we still call it today, the Persian Gulf. And that area around there is what we also know as the Middle East. Okay? So let's do a little review here. Little water review. Did you write down Persian Gulf? You have a chance to write that down? Again, this is all going to come into play a lot more in a couple more weeks. You'll see why. So, let's review. Here, there's an arrow, and this is referring to where? Hit me with the arrow. There it is. Which is this arrow up in the corner? You can barely see it. The Med Sea, right. The Med Sea. Okay, give me another arrow. All right, down there in the bottom. Red Sea. All right, very good. Give me another one. What's that one? Dead Sea. Okay, excellent. And then the last four sea is the Sea of Galilee. Very good. Okay, now four rivers. The one that's on top is called the Tigris River. And then the next one is the Euphrates River. Give me another arrow. Where's next? Okay, there. Oh, too fast. No? It's not too fast. Oh, I didn't change that. So the Jordan River there. And then the next one is the Nile River. And then what's that body of water down the lower right-hand corner? Right. Persian Gulf. Persian Gulf. So there's your bodies of water. Just keep that in the back of your mind because we're going to come back to that. That's going to matter. What you need to understand, well, you'll see this in a second. So let's move on. Let's look at geography. OT places, Old Testament places. And you're going to use that same map, so keep it there. You're going to use that same map, and now we're going to label the land masses or the nations, essentially, that take place in the Old Testament. And this is a big deal, because what we're going to talk about as we go into the end of their lives, the time of the kings, into the prophets, these land masses matter in a big way. And it makes sense, because if you read the Bible, you're like, why was it that big of a deal? Well, because it took a while to get there. Or because the rest of it was desert. Or because, I mean, so there's a lot of things geographically that when you read through, you go, okay, that makes sense. So, let's talk about the places. There's nothing fancy to remember these because these are their names. So the first one, the most important feature of the Old Testament is the nation of Israel. And as far as land during the time of kings, it was right there. It was to the east to the west of the Jordan River. To the west of the Jordan River is Israel. And that continues into the time of Jesus, where that was actually broken into four smaller nations. And again, you can go to Word of the Sequel and talk more about Judea and Samaria and some of those areas. But for the most part, everything that we're going to cover for the next 2 weeks takes place in Israel. So everything else we're going to talk about for the next 2 weeks is in Israel. There's some things that are going to happen later using the rest of this map, and we're going to cover that right now just because this is the intro week. So the second thing we've got on the map here is Egypt. Egypt is down in the lower left-hand corner, or the southwest corner, and the Nile River runs through Egypt. You probably know that. Today we call that nation Egypt. And Egypt is where, in the Old Testament, the early Old Testament, the Israelites were in slavery for 400-some years. And that's why they had to leave. And when they had to leave Egypt to go to the land of Israel, which is where God was sending them, their promised land, they had to cross the Red Sea. It was a physical thing. They had to get there. Now, you got a way zoomed out map. There's parts of the Red Sea that kind of work all the way up into what is now the Suez Canal that did not exist back then. So Israel, Egypt. I need to go faster. Okay, then you've got Assyria. Assyria is a kingdom kind of in the north up there. They were in the north of the Tigris-Euphrates area. They were in that northern part of the Fertile Crescent. Assyria. It's hard to read these fancy fonts. Assyria. So that's where Assyria was. And again, that will work. The rest of these are going to be a big deal in the fourth week of this series. Third and fourth, actually. And then the next one is Babylonia. And they're kind of down, you know, a little bit more southern, still in that Fertile Crescent, that area of habitable land. So Babylonia, the nation of Babylon, was down in there. And then moving a little bit further southeast was Persia. Persia was right on the edge of the Gulf named the Persian Gulf. So that's important. So Assyria, Babylonia, and Persia. And that's it. Now, one thing I want you to understand is because of this Fertile Crescent concept, because you've got a body of water coming up through, kind of from southeast up to the Midwest there, I guess you could call it, in the middle, that big landmass with the rust stain on it, as a matter of fact, that's desert. So when we start talking about some things later, that's desert. It's not a place that you will go to. It's not a place that people live. There weren't things there in that time. And so all of everything that you see will be happening basically in the entire Bible, frankly, runs from Egypt up around Israel along the coast of the Mediterranean, up to Assyria and down to Persia. Nobody went through the desert there because it was just a massive desert. So, all right, let's do a quick review of the Old Testament places. Here we've got, give me an arrow, I think. What is that land called, that nation? Israel, big deal. Okay, Israel, moving on. Egypt, right, Egypt down there. Next, Assyria. They're the ones that are most to the north, and then moving southern a little bit. Babylonia. Sounds like a sandwich. And then finally, Persia. Right. And one, two, three, all of them? Yeah, that's all of them. All right, so there are the nations. We will come back to that again in the third week. Now, I want to give you the backstory. We're not even where we're talking about yet, okay? We're still setting up. So, the backstory. What I'm about to share comes from the original Word series. So if you want the details of this, you need to go to mc3church.org, click on that, and if you're lost, go to mc3church.org and click on Word, because I'm not going to catch up. But I'm giving you kind of the backstory from the beginning of the Old Testament, the beginning of the Bible, to where we find ourselves in this series. So the first part, and this is all part of the storyline, is that part one we call creation. And this is the story of how God created the heavens and the earth, and Adam and Eve, and the whole story of the garden, and sin, and fall, and the Tower of Babel. And then right after that happened, God then appointed a man, not right after, but eventually after that happened, a man named Abraham, to become the father of a nation that he would call Israel. He said, these will be my people, I will be their God, they will be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And Abraham was one of the first of what we call the patriarchs, because these were the fathers of the nation of Israel. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. Moving into... So those are the patriarchs that you have in basically the second half of the book of Genesis. So creation takes place in the first half. The patriarchs are the second half of Genesis. And then we move from the patriarchs into... At the end of the patriarchs, Joseph ends up becoming second in command of Pharaoh in Egypt, which now you know where that is. And he was there because there was a famine in the entire land. And so, because he was the leader, he had stockpiled grain and food and supplies. And so all of the people from Abraham's family, his descendants, which would be Joseph's brothers, siblings, all came to Egypt because there was food there, and Joseph provided for them. Well, then 400 years passed, and over that time, new pharaohs, which is the name for the king of Egypt, came into command, into power, and they didn't remember the whole story, and so they held them in slavery. And so then we've got the story at the beginning of the book of Exodus about what is called the Exodus. And that is where Moses, God picks Moses and says, look, you're going to lead my people out of the land of Egypt into the land that I promised them. I had promised it to Abraham, and now it's time to go there. And so this is the story of Exodus. And Exodus basically covers Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, because the people sinned. God said, hey, it's time to go into the land. And they're like, no, we can't do it. It's too big. And God said, fine, you're going to wander in the desert for 40 years until the first generation dies off, and then your kids will get to go in the land because you were disobedient losers. That's my paraphrase. And so they wandered for 40 years. Deuteronomy ends up Moses saying, okay, guys, it's time to go. Moses dies, hands the reins off to Joshua, and Joshua then takes up what we call the conquest. So creation and patriarchs, Exodus, that is what we just talked about, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. Conquest begins in Joshua. And Joshua then leads the people across the Jordan River into the land of Israel to conquer that land, because God said, this is going to be your land that I promised you. So Joshua leads them around, gets them in there. They kind of settle in there into 12 different tribes. Two tribes were on the east side of the Jordan. The rest of them were in the nation of Israel, in the actual landmass over there. And so that's what happened in the book of Joshua. And then, after that, they kind of settled there, and then God raised up judges. And these judges, there were actually 16 judges. There were 16 judges that led the people. And the word judge didn't mean they were with gavels and saying, oh, I hereby declare that you are guilty or anything. It was the leaders that God appointed. And so the people were led by judges under the authority of God. So that is where we find ourselves for this series. So I've got 10 minutes to actually talk about what I want to talk about today. So the end of the judges' time, there's another judge. His name was Samuel. He wasn't in the book of Judges. He's in the book called Samuel. And in 1 Samuel, Samuel was the judge leading the people, and the people had had enough. And they were tired of these judges and God leading them. And so they said here in 1 Samuel chapter 8, they went to Samuel and said, look, Samuel, we want a king to rule over us. And Samuel's like, whoa, no, come on. God's leading you. You got judges. You got me. He's like, no, we want a king. And Samuel said, I don't want you to do this. And then in verse 19 it says, but the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, which is just in itself a slap in the face of God, who said, look, you're going to be my special, unique, not like everyone else people. But they said, no, we want a king like all the other nations, with a king to lead over us and to go out before us and fight our battles. And that is what brings us to part 6 that we covered in the Word series originally, that is called Kings. So, now, let's talk about kings for 8 minutes. The first king is Saul. And Saul ruled for 40 years. Now, we're going to give you some details about each of these kings. And the things you're going to remember that tie to the story is that Saul 40. So on three, you're going to say Saul 40. One, two, three. Saul 40. Right, because Saul ruled for about 40 years. Now, because you're going to see S-D-S-D, and that's going to be a way to remember what's going on here. So Saul, 40, and Saul ruled for 40 years, and just some things about him. You can find the biography of Saul, the story of Saul's journeys, the story of his life, essentially, in 1 Samuel. Pretty much the book of 1 Samuel, if you want to focus on something, is focusing on the story of Saul. Now, Saul had some issues when it came to his belief. How did he follow God? Well, he had really no heart. He wasn't a wicked king. We'll talk about wicked kings later. But he really didn't follow God with all of his heart. He actually had said in the Bible that he stood head and shoulders above everyone else. And God said, you know, you don't want him. And people were like, no, he's tall, he's strong, he's awesome, we want him. And God's like, but I'm looking for someone that's a man after my own heart. They said, no, Saul is the man. We want Saul. He's cool, he's good looking. So Saul was picked as the very first king of the nation of Israel. He ruled for 40 years. He had no heart. And as far as books, and this is going to make sense in a second, Saul didn't write any books. He didn't write any books of the Bible. Okay? And again, this will make sense in a little bit. But just so you know about Saul. Saul ruled for 40 years. You can find his story in 1 Samuel, give or take. He didn't really have a heart for God. He wasn't wicked, just didn't really follow God. He became very jealous of this upstart kid named David, because David went up against this guy named Goliath and won this battle. And then Saul spent the rest of his life, if you're reading the second half of 1 Samuel, trying to kill David because he was jealous of this guy. Because Saul's heart wasn't following God. So Saul, I almost forgot my little chart. Saul ruled over safety, emergency exit, in case of fire, break paper, and exit. No fire, don't touch the paper. Okay, so Saul ruled over here for how long? 40 years, right? He ruled for 40 years and over the nation of Israel. So, he ruled for 40 years. His heart wasn't there. You can find his story in 1 Samuel. The second person that then came into power that God had appointed earlier and said, look, Saul's not even following me. I want a man after my own heart. His name was David. Say David 40. David ruled for about 40 years. And David was the David, in fact, of David and Goliath. And he ruled for about 40 years. And by the way, this part here represents approximately 120 years. This represents about 400. This is not to scale. Okay, so David ruled for 40 years. Now let me tell you a little about David's story. First of all, his biography, for the most part, David's story is found in 2 Samuel. Now he is in 1 Samuel, and that's okay. But Saul dies, and David then becomes the king over the nation. And again, I'm not covering every detail. I'm giving you big picture stuff. So David becomes the king, and he rules for 40 years. Now, as far as his belief, God even said, he is a man after my own heart. He had a whole heart that followed God. A whole heart that followed God. Am I my outline following with you? Are you still good on the paper? Someone say yes? Okay. All right. So he had a whole heart. He was devoted to God. And we're going to see in a moment, he had some sin issues. He had some problems. And God still called him a man after my own heart. Now, when it comes to books, David actually wrote most of the book of Psalms. So we talked about poetry. Now, there's other people that wrote some of the Psalms. But in general, if you talk about who is the author of Psalms, the answer is David. And the Psalms were a book of worship. They were songs that were sung. They were things that were said and repeated. And so for the most part, David wrote the book of Psalms. So during his ministry, and you can read through some of the Psalms and feel the fear as he's living in caves because King Saul wanted to kill him. And he talks about God being his refuge and strength and strong tower. And all these ideas, this imagery there about how God was watching over him. And then later commits adultery with Bathsheba. He writes a psalm that says, create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit in me. So these were psalms, songs that David wrote. We did a series called A Summer of Psalms. You can find it at mc3church.org. And look at some of the psalms that we looked at for those 8 weeks. Me and the elders taught that series. But so understand that David wrote the book of Psalms. So when you see Psalms in terms of poetry, Those were written during the time of David because David wrote most of them. Okay, does that make sense? Good. So David was the leader. He was the king for these some 40 years. And near the middle of his time, God came to him. And this is a big deal. God came to him and gave him this unconditional covenant, this unconditional promise. And we call it the Davidic covenant is the fancy name for it. But it's a big deal. And it's found in 2 Samuel 7, 11b through 16. And this is a quick summary of what it says. It says, God is speaking, by the way. Furthermore, the Lord declares that he will make a house for you, a dynasty of kings. He's talking to David. For when you die and are buried with your ancestors, I will raise up one of your descendants, your own offspring, and I will make his kingdom strong. He is the one who will build a house, a temple for my name, and I will secure his royal throne forever. So God makes three very important promises to David. These are unconditional. It means David doesn't have any say in what actually happens. God says, I will do it. The first thing that David promises in this covenant is a throne. He says, David, look, and you'll see this as we get on to here, that it's not guaranteed that your kid is going to rule after you. That's the way it's supposed to happen, but that's not guaranteed. But God says to David, look, your son will rule after you. I will continue your throne in your family name. And that's what it says here in part 11, and it's highlighted on the next page there. He says, I will raise up one of your descendants, your own offspring, and I will make his kingdom strong. Time out. The next king, spoiler, his name is Solomon. Solomon is a descendant of David. Solomon's mom is a woman named Bathsheba. Bathsheba was not David's wife. Bathsheba was the wife of a man named Uriah. And David, very important change, David saw Bathsheba, took her home, slept with her, had her husband killed, and she became pregnant. And that baby died as a judgment from God. Then God said, look, your wife is pregnant again, and I'm going to use him to be the next king. And so is God full of grace? Absolutely. Like, that's the beauty of that story is that, I mean, he had official right, appropriate-wise, but God said, no, I'm going to use the one that's broken. We did a series called The Many Jacob Generations and Jesus Genealogy, A Christmas Tale. And we talked about the different things and how these people in the line of Jesus were messed up people. And that was showing that Jesus, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, as we sang earlier, that Jesus, his line, was full of broken people because that's who we are. And God is demonstrating his grace. So God says, look, I promise that your descendant will rule on the throne. And then the second thing, so you've got a throne. Then he says, your descendant will also, this son of yours will build the temple for me. And we did a series called Dwell. Again, it's all there. We did a series called Dwell, where we looked at the tabernacle, which was where the people worshiped God, and he came and physically dwelt above the ark. And that was a temporary place while they wandered for those 40 years. It was a tent. They would go somewhere, they would pick it up, they'd move on as God led them. And then eventually God said, you're going to build a permanent house for me to worship. And that was called the temple. And Solomon was the one that was to build that temple. And if you listen to the crop series from 3 weeks ago, we actually talked about when Solomon, it was the beginning of the temple. He had just finished it, and God spoke to him and said, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, then I will hear from heaven and heal your land. I missed something. Speak my faith, yeah, and I will hear their land. And that has nothing to do with us. That has everything to do with Solomon building the temple. You have to listen to that. So, the second thing, he says, he is the one who will build a house, a temple for my name. So God promised David, your descendant will rule. It's going to be the next, your kid will be on the throne. He's going to build the temple. And then the third thing, and this is a big deal, is that your kingdom will be a timeless kingdom. It will not end. God's promise to David. And that's what he says. I will secure his royal throne forever. A few verses later in verse 16, he says, your house and your kingdom will continue before me for all time. For all time. And your throne will be secure forever. You've got David. Where's David? David's here. And we're going to follow over the next few weeks David's line and people and problems and good things and bad things and everything's coming down here. And then we're going to get to the end and we're going to be at the end of the Old Testament. And then you're going to read over here in the New Testament this genealogy. Why do we read genealogies? He begat him and was the son of him who begat them. Because Jesus, the throne continued from David, and Jesus will reign forevermore. a timeless kingdom. This promise to David was fulfilled through Jesus and is still yet to be fulfilled in the end times as we talk about what does it mean when Jesus rules forever. Big deal. Okay, so we're doing all right because there's no ignition upstairs, so I'm not annoying teachers. Okay, but the people in the nursery, and kids are fine in the nursery, right? All right, but I'm almost done. So that was the covenant that God made with David. And so then David dies. David had some issues with Bathsheba again. At the end of his life wasn't going as well. And eventually his son, Solomon, would become the next king. And Solomon ruled for 40 years. So say Solomon 40. Very good. Solomon ruled for 40 years. This is not the scale. That should be over this way a little more, maybe. Anyway, I won't touch it. Okay, so Solomon ruled for 40 years. So you have three kings covering a span of 120 years. And so let's talk about Solomon and his issues. First of all, his biography can be found, for the most part, in 1 Kings. In 1 Kings, you will read the story of Solomon and how he reigned, what happened in his reign. During his reign, he built the temple. And we talked about that a couple weeks ago, like I said. And he built this physical permanent place for God to dwell. And that temple was destroyed, rebuilt, destroyed, rebuilt, destroyed, rebuilt. And then we get to the same temple. Is it round when Jesus is there? And Jesus says some things that really offends the Pharisees when he talks about the temple. But that's New Testament. That's Word to Speak. You have to listen to that online. So Solomon is found in 1 Kings. Solomon, also, as far as his heart, his belief, he had a half heart. He was kind of into God and following in the ways of his father, but kind of not. He was distracted. He had a divided heart. And we'll come back to that in just a second, because I want to talk about the books real quick. Solomon wrote a number of books. God came to Solomon shortly after he began reigning and said, Solomon, I will give you anything you want. And Solomon said, God, give me wisdom. And so Solomon, aside from Jesus, God, man, we'll talk about that next month in our 3 series. But Solomon was the wisest person most likely to ever live because he had supernatural wisdom from God. And he wrote most of the book of Proverbs, which is full of wisdom. He wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, which is a story about how Solomon tried everything because God also said, because you asked for wisdom, I will give you great wealth. And Solomon was one of the richest people of all time. And he says in the book of Ecclesiastes, I've tried it all. I did this because I had money to do it. I slept with all these women. I had hundreds of wives. And I had all this palace and all this money and these things and service and all that. I tried it all. And when it came to the end, I determined that life stinks. We did that series in February, about 3-5 years ago. It's online as well. But the whole book of Ecclesiastes is him saying, I've tried it all. And it wasn't good enough for me. And then he wrote the book of Song of Solomon, which is a love poem to his wife, also called the Song of Songs. So Solomon had some issues. And so he didn't quite follow the way of his father. I'm not even on my page here. Something. What's the passage? There, in 1 Kings, chapter 11, it says, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter. He loved Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. Next slide. I think, yeah. He had 700 wives of royal birth. That wasn't good. Okay? One wife. Hard enough. Okay. I just mean in terms of being an appropriate husband. Nothing. Anyway. All right. 300 concubines, which we're not going to talk about them right now because of the audience. And his wives led him astray as Solomon grew old. His wives turned his heart after other gods. God said, stay focused on me, on my people, on the woman that I've given you. Instead, he says, no, I'm going to follow these other people. They distracted him. His heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father has been. And his heart was pulled away. And God has called us not to have 700 wives, not to even have one wife in the context of Solomon. We talked about that last month. But there is a principle here. Not a promise, but a principle that we can apply, that God wants our whole heart to be devoted to Him. Our entire heart to be following Him. And so we're going to sing this song as the band closes us, called One Thing, and about how Jesus needs to be our one thing. Would you stand up and sing with them?